Masechet Baba Kama Daf Ayin. We begin with an important topic of giving someone power of attorney. If I can't be there to be a litigant for myself and plead on behalf of myself, can I ask someone else to do it? We would normally think of a power of attorney as a normal thing, that basically it's an agent or a messenger, a shaliach. And we're going to see that Avasheh will have such a concept. But we're going to start with the Amre Nehara De'ah, the sages of Nehara De'ah, who have a different concept, that in order for you to represent me, I actually have to make you the litigant. So I actually have to transfer the thing that I'm trying to get, the money or the item that I'm trying to get. I have to transfer you to you the ownership of it so that you can now become the new litigant. So Nehada say, Lokat Vinan Urcheta Amitaltele. This document of authorization, called an Urcheta, you cannot write that about with unmovable property, only on land, but movable property is a problem. Amarav Asher le'amemar, Ma'ita ama, Amar le mishum derebi Yochanan. So Rav Asher asked Amemar, what's wrong? How come the rabbis of Nehara De'ah say that you cannot make this power of attorney document for a movable item? And the answer is because of what Rabbi Yochanan said, and this halacha that we've already studied, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Gazal ve'lo nitya'ashu ha'be'alim, shenehem enam yicholim le'akdish. Ze lefi she'eno shelo, ve'ze lefi she'eno b'rishuto. If someone steals an item, and the owners have not yet despaired in getting it back. And so now the thief has it in his possession, but is still owned by the original owner. Neither of those two people can make it hekdesh, can consecrate it. The thief cannot because it doesn't belong to him, and you can't consecrate something that you don't own. And the owner also cannot because it's not in his physical possession. The thief has it, and therefore neither can do that. Well, how is that relevant to this? As follows, just like you can't consecrate something that you own but is not in your possession, so too you cannot transfer control and ownership over something even that you own but is not in your possession. So in this case, the owner, some guy owns a watch. He gives it to a watchman to hold for him, and then he comes to claim it, and the watchman is like, oh, what watch? I gave it back to you. You never gave me a watch, whatever. He's denying it. Now, the owner doesn't have time to deal with this, or he's in a different country or whatever, so he wants to appoint an agent, a lawyer, to deal with it for him. According to Nehara De'ah, the mechanism is, it's not just a shaliach, the mechanism is that the owner will transfer ownership of the watch to the lawyer. But in order to transfer it, you need the actual item. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, we're assuming, just like Rabbi Yochanan says, you can't consecrate an item that you own if you don't have possession. So too, he would say that you cannot transfer ownership of an item, even though you're the owner, if you don't have it in your possession. And therefore, there is no way to make this document of authorization for a movable item that's not in your possession. That's one version of what Nehara De'ah said, a different version that makes no reference to the Biyochanan. So this is nothing, it's totally different. It's just still a limitation on when you can make this kind of authorization. Amrei Nehara De'ah, lo katvinan urcheta metaltele dechafre. Tama dechafre, demechze keshikra, aval lo kafre katvinan. In this version, we're adding another word. One cannot write this document of authorization if it's movable property that is denied, right? If I have this watch and I give it to someone to hold for me and he denies it. And so now I no longer can make this document of authorization. Why? Because this, it looks like falsehood. Since we don't really know, does this watch exist? Who has it? Who owns it? Where it is? Since it's in doubt, the whole matter is in doubt. When I write a paper and I say, I transfer to you, the lawyer, the ownership of this watch and all responsibility for it. But that sounds like a document of transfer or sale, but the item, we don't really know if it exists. So yeah, maybe it does, but right now it's still in doubt. I mean, no, that's why you're trying to hire a lawyer to figure out in the first place. But since it is in doubt, therefore, it looks like something false, and therefore, you cannot do it. Only if everybody agrees, yes, yeah, I gave it to him, and he knows it exists. I just, can't deal with the paperwork right now. Then you can write one. So as long as there is no denial, right? The watchman or the debtor, whoever it is, you didn't deny it. Yes, I owe you the money, and I just want to have someone represent me to go through the motions of collecting it or doing whatever needs to be done, then it is possible to transfer. And so according to this, this would not agree with Rabbi Yochanan in this version, because Rabbi Yochanan would say doesn't matter, there's no way to transfer some movable item. According to this, you can transfer a movable item even if it's not in your possession. The only problem would be if there's a denial, then you can't. All right, now back to the Nahar De'ah. They say another halacha. V'amri Nahar De'ah, urcheta delakati bezil don uzche v'apek le'nafshach let be'meshasha. We actually have the formula that you have to write in such a document, and such a document of authorization that doesn't have the following phrase in it. It says, go and don, and you take legal action, and you can merit and collect this for yourself. If you don't have that phrase, then it's not a valid document. So you see how powerful this is, right? Basically, even though I own the watch, I have to transfer all rights to you. You can go to court, and you can collect it, and you can keep it. Now, the hope is that if you are successful, then you'll give it back to me because you're doing this, after all, for me. But technically, it's yours, right? You're collecting your own money. That's the only way you can represent me. You can't be a legal fiction as if you're me. You have to be the actual litigant. You can only be the litigant if you're collecting it for yourself. And so I'm saying, yes, you can collect it for yourself. Why do you need to do all this? Because the other litigant, the watchman, will say, well, you are not the litigant of me, right? Who are you? You're a stranger. He has a right to say, I only want to deal with the person who is suing me, who claims that this watch is his, then I'll come to court and deal with him. But some stranger who has nothing, a third party, who has no cause here, I don't have to deal with them. And therefore, I have to make that other person the litigant. So see, we're not really recognizing this kind of legal fiction that a lawyer somehow represents me. The lawyer has to be the new owner. Amar Abaye, Vikatibe Lemechsal Shalish Rabbi Amigo de Mishtae Dina Apalga Mishta Dina Kula. Beza says, listen, when you transfer ownership to the lawyer, you don't have to transfer the entire amount. You could transfer half, a third, a quarter, right? Some percentage. And that makes him enough to be a rightful litigant. He has a claim. He's a claimant. And since he can go and make judgment for part of it, so he can make judgment for the whole thing, right? If you have 10 partners in an item, not every partner has to show up to court to argue the case. One of them can, and then if they show that they're right, and they all took a loan together or deposited something together, so then once one wins, then all of them can collect. So you don't have to transfer the entire amount to the lawyer, but you have to transfer some. You have to give him some share of it in order for him to be a litigant, a valid claimant. A consequence of this is that if this lawyer guy goes and grabs the item for himself, then the original owner cannot take it from him, right? Once I say, this is my watch, I gave it to someone to deposit, I authorize you to be a lawyer, all right, but I have to transfer all part or all of the ownership to you. If you, the lawyer, go and are able to get the watch out of the watchman, then you decide, this is a nice watch, I'm going to keep it. Nothing I could do about it, right? I'm going to hope that I pick someone that I trust will be a friend and will give it to me back after, but I can't make them. Rav Asher amar, kevan de chatbeh le, kol de mit ane min dina kabelit alai, shaliach shavyeh. Rav Asher has a completely different understanding of the power of attorney, and this is more like we would think of it today, that as long as you write, the original owner writes, I accept upon myself anything that develops, mit ane, anything that you will respond, any responses you give to the court, anything they tell you, anything, any decision that you say, I accept upon myself. As long as I give you full authority to deal with the case as you wish, then that is a shaliach, and I don't have to transfer ownership to you. You represent my decision-making power. That is totally valid, and I don't have to transfer it to you. So that's Rav Ashi. But another version, Vika de'amar shutafa shavia. Some say not shaliach, but rather shutaf, that you are my partner. So this would be a follow-up to similar to Abaye. But in here, I don't have to give you a percentage. I could just say, you know, I own it all, but you have full decision making. That's also like a partnership that you are, even if I own it, you're the decision maker. And so that becomes a partner. Now, what's the difference between being a shaliach and a shutaf? Difference would be to seize half of it. If when I appoint this lawyer, he is just an agent, then the agent cannot seize it on and keep it. Right? He's only my agent. If he's able to get the watch, he has to give it to me. However, if we view him as a partner, well, that's more like what we said before, like Nahar De'an, like Amir, since it's a partner, so you, the lawyer who seizes it, can keep half of it and then gives me the other half. And the final law is shaliach, right? Even though we spent more time talking about than Nahar De'ah, nevertheless, Rav Asher and his first version, yes, you can actually make a power of attorney who represents you, and even though they have no ownership, they're simply an agent. Good, next Mishnah. Ganav al pi shenayim ve tabach umachar al pihem, o al pi shenayim acherim, mishalim tashlume arba'a va chamisha. Someone stole something, and there's two witnesses that saw that, right? Witnesses A and B, we'll call them. And then, afterwards, the thief slaughtered the animal, or sold this animal, the ox or the sheep. And they, the same two people witnessed that also, Mr. A and Mr. B. Or maybe it's two other witnesses, Mr. C and Mr. D. Either way, the thief has to pay 4 and 5 times. In other words, it doesn't have to be, it can be the same witnesses for both the thief and the slaughter, but it could be two different sets of witnesses. We'll talk about the chidush about splitting testimony. Can you have two different sets of witnesses testify about a crime or two parts of a crime? Ganav umachar beShabbat. Ganav umachar avodah zarah. Ganav betabach beYom HaKippurim. If the thief, in all these cases, one still has to pay 4 and 5. If someone stole and sold an animal on Shabbat, or he stole and sold it for the sake of idolatry, or stole and slaughtered it even, sold it or slaughtered it on Yom Kippur. Now, in all these cases, he has to pay 4 and 5, even though he's violating other laws as well. So notice that the language is exact. If he would steal and slaughter it on Shabbat, well, slaughtering an animal on Shabbat is one of the melachot, 39 melachot, isur de oraita, liable to the death penalty. And so if he would do that on Shabbat, since he's liable to the death penalty, we apply kim le b'derba mineh, he only gets the bigger punishment, which is the death penalty, and therefore does not have to pay money. He does not have to pay 4 or 5, since he did the slaughtering, and this is the very same act of slaughtering as both violates Shabbat and triggers a 4 and 5, and therefore, since he can't get both, he only get capital punishment. That's if he slaughtered it. But selling, buying and selling on Shabbat is not capital punishment. It's a gezerah that you may come to write, but if you don't write, then it's only a gezerah. Therefore, it's kind of surprising that what we think of as work is business trends. Most people, all right, businessmen are working and buying and selling. We think of that as work, but actually in the 39 melachot, it's only actually creating, doing something that creates something new, and buying and selling is not one of the 39 melachot. Since, although it's prohibited to sell something on Shabbat, since there's no capital punishment, he does have to pay 4 and 5. Also with Avodah Zarah, if he would do Shechita, if he slaughters an animal for Avodah Zarah, that's liable death penalty, and he would not pay 4 and 5. But simply selling an animal for Avodah Zarah is not, there's no death penalty, and therefore he has to pay 4 and 5. Yom Kippur, even whether he sells it, that's for sure, and even if he slaughters it on Yom Kippur, if someone violates, does melacha on Yom Kippur, they get karet, but not death penalty in the hands of a court. And since there is no death penalty, even for slaughtering on Yom Kippur, he also has to pay 4 and 5, right? That's important that really the holiest day of the year people think is Yom Kippur, but Shabbat is more stringent than even Yom Kippur. And so in all these cases, since there's no death penalty, there's no kimle, bedrba mine, and one has to pay 4 and 5. גנב משל אביו וטבח ומחר ואחר כך מת אביו גנב וטבח ואחר כך הקדיש משלם תשלומי 4 ו-5. If someone steals a sheep from his own father and slaughters it or sells it, and then his father dies, such that then he will get the inheritance, or he and his brothers, if he has brothers, get the inheritance, he still has to pay 4 and 5, because he stole it and slaughtered it when the father's alive. So therefore, yeah, even if the father dies, he has to pay into that 4 and 5 to the inheritance, which will then get split between him and his brothers, but still he has to pay. If he slaughtered it, stole it and slaughtered it, and then made it hekdesh, he has to pay 4 and 5, because at the time that he slaughtered it, it was still not hekdesh. This is in contrast to the we saw in the previous Mishnah, that if he steals it, then it becomes hekdesh, and we discussed either he makes it hekdesh or the owner makes it hekdesh, whoever. If he steals it, and then it's made hekdesh, and only then he slaughters it, he does not have to pay 4 and 5, because you don't pay 4 and 5 to hekdesh. But here, he steals it and slaughters it before hekdesh, he's already liable to pay the owner. And the fact that it makes it hekdesh after does not change that. Ganav tavach lirfua o lichlavim, hashochet v'nimsa terefa, hashochet chulin ba'azara, mesharem tashlomeh 4 ve-5. In all these cases, one has to pay 4 and 5, even though one does not intend to or cannot eat the flesh of the animal. So if someone stole and slaughtered a sheep, but he did it for medicinal purposes. He wants to take the meat and, I don't know, put it on a wound or something. Or he's going to feed it to the dogs. So it's not for human consumption. So even though he did kosher slaughter, but the slaughter is not to make it kosher. It wouldn't matter for him if it was not kosher. Or if he slaughters it, you know, a kosher slaughter, but then it turns out that there's a problem in its lungs or whatever, and it's terefa, so it's not kosher. Or he does a normal shechita, but it's an unsanctified animal, and he does it in the Bet HaMikdash, which is also not allowed, and makes it inedible, and makes it not kosher. In all these cases, even though the slaughter is not for the purpose of getting kosher edible meat, nevertheless, he still has to pay 4 and 5. Just the act of doing a slaughter. See, you don't have to pay 4 and 5 if you like throw it off the a cliff or just kill it in another way. You only have to pay the 4 and 5 if it's a proper ritual slaughter. And so, as long as a proper ritual slaughter, even if it ends up not being kosher or you don't intend to eat it, doesn't matter. That still triggers the 4 and 5. However, Rabbi Shimon poter b'shne elu. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the last two. He agrees in the first two, because the first two, you're doing ritual slaughter, even though you meant to feed it to the dogs. Technically, it's kosher. You could eat it. You could change your mind. You meant to use it for medicine, but you could eat it. So this is a kosher slaughter, and it doesn't really matter what you attended. You made kosher meat. The second two, Rabbi Shimon says that Rabbi Shimon says, not only here in general, that something is called shechita only if it successfully creates kosher meat. But if for some reason, let's say it's a terefa, then the shechita is not called a shechita. Even though, if you look at, take a camera, right, it looks like the same thing from the outside. He's doing the same exact same act, but if it turns out that for whatever reason it's not kosher, either because it's terefa or because it was done in the wrong place, and it's not edible, that's not called shechita. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says you don't have to pay 4 and 5 in these last two cases. The Gemara now comments on the first case of two witnesses that say we saw he stole it, and a different set of witnesses say that we saw him slaughter it. Lema matnitin de lo kerebi akiva di rebi akiva hamar davar velo hasi davar. It seems that our Mishnah cannot possibly be reconciled with Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva quoted the pasuk that says alpi shenayim o shelosha adim yakum davar. You need two or three witnesses to attest to a matter. So that means it has to be a full matter and not half of a matter. In other words, Rabbi Akiva is saying you can't have two different sets of witnesses both come testify about two parts of a sin. You need one set of witnesses to talk about the entire sin. For example, you can't have one set of witnesses come and say, we saw this guy eat half a kezayit of pig. And another two set of witnesses said, we saw him eat another kezayit of pig, a second one. Right? There was two on his plate. One saw one saw him eat the other. These two things do not combine. In order to hold someone liable or to prove something, you need the one set of witnesses to say both. And so here, according to Rabbi Akiva, it seems, you would need one set of witnesses to see the entire crime from the theft to the slaughter in order to make the person, the thief, liable to pay 4 and 5. And here you have one set of witnesses for the theft and a different set of witnesses for the slaughter. And so you cannot combine two different sets of witnesses for one crime. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva cannot be reconciled with our Mishnah. De Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yose. And now we have the source for where Rabbi Akiva actually says this principle. Kishalach Abba Chalafta etzel Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri lilmod Torah. V'amri la Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri etzel Abba Chalafta. So this is Rabbi Yose says, this is Rabbi Yose ben Chalafta. So he's talking about his own father, Abba Chalafta, went to study with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Or some say it's the other way around, this Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri went to study Torah with Abba Chalafta. In any case, one said to the other, Hale haresha chalaha, shana rishona bifne shenayim, sheniya bifne shenayim, shidlishit bifne shenayim, mahu. We're talking about making a chazakah on a piece of land. If I am sitting on a piece of land and I use it, it's a field, and I plant and take from the produce of the land for 3 years in a row without anyone challenging my ownership of it, then that is a proof of ownership. As long as I have also a claim, I claim that you bought it to me or you gifted it to me, and look, I'm here for 3 years and no one ever protested, so then I don't need a deed or any other proof. But first, you have to be there for 3 years, and you need witnesses that, in fact, you were there, and you ate the crop, right? You benefited from the crops that it grew all 3 years. So here we have a case where there's two witnesses that say, this guy lived there for 1 year. And the second set of witnesses say, yeah, this guy lived there for another year. And the third come and say, year number three, we saw him there. But these are three different sets of witnesses. What about that case? So this is, these two sages are asking each other, Amalo harezo hazakah, and Rabbi Chalafta, or it said b'yichod amniri, or the other way around, said that works, right? Because you have one testified about year one, another testified about year two, another testified about year three. So yes, we can combine multiple testimonies together, and now we have a full proof. And the other colleague said, I agree with you, but Rabbi Akiva does not, because he said that one set of witnesses has to testify about the entire matter, the entire proof. If it's like a case like this, you need one set of witnesses to say, we saw this guy live there and eat from the crop all 3 years. Or if it's a sin, you need one set of witnesses to see the entire act of the sin. And you can't have one, these two witnesses do half and the other two witnesses do half. And therefore, our Mishnah must not be the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Abaye, afilu temar Rabbi Akiva. Mi la modeh Rabbi Akiva bishnayim omrim kidesh, ushnayim omrim ba'al. He says, no, I can say even Rabbi Akiva would agree in this case of the gonev and shohet, because Rabbi Akiva agreed in another case as well that is more similar to our case. Two witnesses say, this man and woman, they did kiddushin. And then, all right, they did the ring ceremony. Good. Now they're mikudeshet. And then the second set of witnesses said, we saw that this couple, the same couple, did bi'ah, meaning for nisuin. Now, these are two separate ones. Can we combine them together and assume that they did kiddushin and nisuin? Right, there are consequences if there's only kiddushin or if there's also nisuin. Yes, we can. Even the Bi'ai Akiva would agree that we can combine these two sets of witnesses. Why? Daf agav de adebi asriche le ade kiddushin, kevan de ade kiddushin la asriche le ade bi'ah, davar karina be'. Because even though the second set of witnesses for bi'ah, they rely on the first set of witnesses. If a West set of witnesses come and say, we saw this man and woman, they had bi'ah. It doesn't mean they're married, because them having intercourse, if there was no kiddushin before, that's meaningless. There's no this could be bi'at zinut. It doesn't mean that they're married unless we know there was kiddushin before. So the second set of witnesses needs the first set of witnesses. However, the other way around is not true. The adei kiddushin don't need the second set of witnesses. They are a standalone testimony that has significance. Two witnesses that say, we saw the ring ceremony, this man and this woman are mikudeshet. That has a lot of legal significance by itself. So therefore, that stands alone. Since that part stands alone, therefore, everybody would certainly agree with that, right? And then even the Bi'ai Akiva would agree that the other half can also stand alone, that the Bi'ah can be a different set of witnesses. You don't need them to be the same, right? Because this is davar karina be'. They're testifying to a whole matter, the kiddushin, and therefore the ones for nisuin is now a separate matter that it can be separated from the two. Unlike the 3 years where testifying that someone sat on the land for 1 year has zero halachic significance, right? In no case does that matter. And therefore, right, that cannot add up to more. But as long as the one part of it is stand alone, then the other part can be a second set of witnesses. Hachaname, and that applies to our case, our Mishnah as well. Af agav de ade tibicha sirich le de geneva, kevan de ade geneva la sirich le de tibicha, davar karina be. Even though the witnesses about the slaughter, witnessing a slaughter by itself is not a crime, right? So I can slaughter animals all day. Maybe I'm a butcher. Maybe I'm slaughtering my own animal. I wouldn't have to pay 4 and 5 just because there's witnesses that saw me slaughter an animal. The witnesses to the slaughter are only significant if they come after witnesses that say I stole it. So therefore, that's not standalone. However, the other way is standalone. Witnesses that come and say I stole this ox, that by itself is a crime, and therefore it's standalone, it's significant in and of itself, and certainly those witnesses that are significant, they can be separated from the second set of witnesses that say that I slaughtered it. So therefore, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that since one part of it is standalone, so too the others can be standalone and do not have to be the same set of witnesses, right? That's called davar. And it's good. This is great. So now our Mishnah is not only Rabbanan, can also be Rabbi Akiva. But now that we quoted this source for Rabbi Akiva, v'rabbanan hay davar v'lo hasi davar le'me'ote mai, Rabbi Akiva used the word davar to say half a testimony about half an act does not count. What do the rabbis use this word for, right? Wouldn't they also agree that some kind of half an act is not good, but it's not the cases we were talking about, because they, Rabbanan, say 3 years, testimony about 3 separate years does not add up together. So what would they exclude? Lemeute echad omer echad begaba ve'echad omer echad bichresah. If you have testimony to see if a girl is a minor or has become an adult, we have to see if she has two hairs. Normally, even one woman can examine her and see if there's two hairs. But there are some cases where you need two valid witnesses to see to testify about this. So one witness says, I saw one hair on her back. It's a euphemism for her privates. He saw from the back. And another one said, I saw only one hair on her belly in the front. This does not count. Even Rabbanan, who say you can combine two sets, separate testimonies, but in this case, you cannot combine them. Before we explain that, first we have to say, wait a second, is only one witness to one hair and one witness to another hair? Hai chasi davar v'chasi adutu. This is not only half of a matter, it's also half of half testimony. There's only one witness to each. So no one thinks you could combine two witnesses that each saw different things. So that can't be that can't be what it means. Elal mute shenayim omrim echad gabegaba ushnayim omrim echad bekeresa. Rather, we have to mean it must mean echad means one pair, right? Said, but so let's change that to mean make it clearer. Two witnesses said we saw one hair on her back. Two witnesses said we saw one hair on her front. And that also does not count. Hane amre ketana, behane amre ketanahi. Now, how come the rabbis? How is this case different from the one before? How come the rabbis say over here you cannot add them together, but in the case of 3 years that you can add them together? And the answer is it's fundamentally different here, where two sets of witnesses say we saw one hair. They're not only are they not testifying to something significant, because one hair is not significant. It's actually opposite. Testimony that she has one hair is testimony that she is a minor, right? She's saying, oh, we saw one hair. That means she is a minor. And so you have actually two sets of witnesses saying she is a minor. So that doesn't add up to testimony that she is an adult, right? It's two witnesses that are actually saying the opposite of what we are trying to prove. That's different from the years where, you come and said that one set of witnesses says, we saw this guy be squatting on this land for 1 year. Okay, that doesn't prove that they own it, but it's not against that he owns it. Could be he's the owner and he's there for 1 year. So in that case, they can add up to make a full case. Here, the testimony by itself is actually a negative testimony, and that's why even the rabbis would agree with Rabbi Akiva that in this case you do not add them up, and that's what they do with the word davar velo hasi davar. They also apply it in cases like that. We now move to the next clause of the Mishnah, ganav u'machar b'shabbat, if someone steals and sells an item, an ox or a sheep, on Shabbat, he does have to pay 4 and 5, because this violation of Shabbat does not require the death penalty. He only sold it, as opposed to slaughtering it. Okay, so now we have a baraita, v'hatanya patur. We have a baraita that says the exact same case, ganav u'machar b'shabbat, and it says he does not have to pay 4 and 5. Why not? So we're going to see a couple of different answers of scenarios. We have to come up with a scenario where selling a sheep on Shabbat is going to violate deoraita and require the death penalty, and therefore would not have to pay 4 and 5. So answer number one, Amar Rami Bar Hama, Ki tanya hi de patur b'omer lo akos lecha te'ena, b'te'enati v'tikani li genevutich. So the thief comes to a buyer and says, hey, would you like to buy this sheep that I stole recently? And the buyer says, yes, I would like to buy it. And here's how I want to make the transaction. This is on Shabbat. The buyer says, you see that fig tree over there that I own? Go and pull off a fig and take it for yourself. And through that, I will acquire the ox. This is probably a kinyan chalipin, a symbolic exchange. And so then the thief goes ahead and does that. Now, he is violating Shabbat deoraita, which requires capital punishment by picking a fig off of the tree. And that very same act is also making the acquisition of the sheep and enacting the sale. And there you go. That's a case where if one stole an animal and then sold it on Shabbat through this type of mechanism, he would be liable to capital punishment and therefore not have to pay 4 and 5. That's the case that this baraita, this is patur, was talking about. But the rabbis rejected. They said, Amri, v'chavandechi taba le kaman bedina, lo amri nan le zir shalim, de mechayev benafshou, ha mechira name, la mechira hi. So this sale itself would be invalid because, let's say it came to the bet din, right? Let's say the thief did not deliver the sheep at that point, and then this buyer came to court and said, ah, this guy, this thief, he sold me the sheep, and he even plucked a grape off the tree in order to enact the sale. So the sale is final, and he has to give me the sheep. And then the rabbi says, okay, when did this happen? He says, oh, on Shabbat. He says, what? He plucked the tree. He plucked a fig off the tree on Shabbat. So the Bet Din will not tell him, go and pay, because instead they'll say, take this thief and give him capital punishment for violating Shabbat. And since it would not be a collectible sale, you could not collect it in Bet Din, therefore the sale is invalid. I mean, a sale that you cannot enforce is not a valid sale, and therefore it's not a case of a thief that stole and sold the animal, because the sale never went through. Ela amarav papa. So we have a second answer. Don't forget the first one. We're going to come back to it and revive it. Amarav papa, give a second one. Ve'omer lo zerok genevutich lechaseri v'tikani li genevutech. This guy, the thief, stole a sheep. And he comes and says to a buyer, hey, you want to buy this? And it's on Shabbat. And the buyer says, yes, I would love to buy it. Listen, you're in the Shut HaRabim over there. You're in the street. Just take the sheep, throw it over my fence into my yard, and I will acquire it in that way. Now, by throwing it into the yard, he is violating Shabbat midoraita. He's transferring something from the Shut HaRabim to the Shut HaYachid. And so it's the very same act of transfer of ownership is also violates Shabbat, and he gets the death penalty. This is the case that the Baraita was talking about, where it said that the thief does not have to pay 4 and 5. Okay, brilliant. But now we analyze. Keman, kedibi akiba damar kiluta kemishon hadamya. Di kerabanan kevan dematya lachasar beto kana liyan Shabbat domechev ad dematya l'ara. Says this answer is fine, but it will only work according to the Rabbi Akiva, who says that when something enters into the airspace of someone's yard, it's as if it's at rest. You see, for Shabbat, in order to violate transfer, you have to not only transfer, but also put it down. It has to be hanacha on the ground. So the rabbis say, the majority against Rabbi Akiva say, that if you throw something into a yard, one is not liable to violating Shabbat until it lands in the yard, so that there's a transfer and landing. But Rabbi Akiva says, no, once it enters the airspace, it's as if it landed. So yes, according to Rabbi Akiva, this works, because when the thief takes this poor sheep and throws it up into the air over the fence, as soon as it enters the airspace, he violated both Shabbat and the sale the transaction happens at the very same time, and therefore he's liable death penalty and doesn't have to pay. But according to Rabbanan, once it enters the airspace, entering the airspace, even Rabbanan would agree that is an acquisition. So he acquires it at that moment. And then 2 seconds later, when it lands on the ground, only then does he violate Shabbat. So since it happens at two different times, we do not apply Kim Lebed Rabamine, since it was not one act at the same time, but rather they happen sequentially. So according to Rabbanan, he would have to pay 4 and 5 as soon as it enters the airspace. That's it. You're liable to that. And then when it lands, then he's liable to the death penalty. So yes, he gets the thief would get death penalty, and he would have to pay 4 or 5 according to Rabbanan. But the Gemara says, no, we can explain this even according to Rabbanan. It's when the buyer made a stipulation and said, listen, I want the acquisition not to happen when it enters my airspace. I want it to only register when it lands. And so if you make that stipulation, that's fine, and that works. And then, even according to Rabbanan, where the thief throws it in, only when it lands is he liable to both violating Shabbat and making the acquisition. But since Kim Le'ed Rabba Mineh, he only gets a death penalty and does not have to pay. That's the case that the Baraita was talking about. All right, good. All that is Rav Papa's answer. But now Rava Amar Le'olam Kerami Bar Chama. Rava and Rami Bar Chama are often at odds with each other. It's nice to see here that Rava is helping out Rami Bar Chama, and he says, Et na nasra Torah va'afilu ba al imo v'itab'a le kaman bedina mi amdinan le kum ha'bla et nan. Rava says, what was your problem with Rami Bar Chama's case? where he says, pick a fig on Shabbat, and that way one will be liable. Your problem was that this sale is not collectible. And you said, if a sale is not collectible in Bet Din, then it's not a valid sale. But that's not true. I'll give you another case of something that's not collectible, and yet we still consider it a sin and a valid transaction. And here we're talking about etnan zona. If the payment, if someone, a man goes and pays a zona with a sheep, he gives her a sheep, that sheep is not permitted to be used as a sacrifice. Right? Etnan, the price to give into a zona is not allowed by the Torah. And that would apply even in a case where a son gives a sheep like this to his mother. So try not to imagine this, but right, if a son and a mother are together and she is the zona here and he pays her with a sheep, the sheep would still be prohibited. It's still in etnan zona. Now let's say the son doesn't actually give the mother the sheep, he promises it, but then he doesn't deliver, and she comes to court and says, oh no, my son, he owes me a sheep. And the Beit Din says, what are the circumstances? She explains the circumstances. They said, what, you did that? You're deserving of capital punishment, and you cannot collect the sheep because you get capital punishment, right? So the Beit Din would the Beit Din say, give her the animal? They would not say that. They would instead take her and him to be killed. Yet, even so, still that sheep itself is still prohibited to sacrifice because it was, right, it was given or promised, or they did have to do, they did some kind of transaction, and it was therefore already etnan zona. So you see that a sale or transaction, even if it's not collectible in court because of a technicality, the person is going to get capital punishment, nevertheless, the transaction is a valid transaction. And so too, back in our case, and when the person is picking the fig, and he says, well, okay, that this is a transaction, and then he goes to court to get the seh that he bought, and the court would say, wait, he doesn't have to pay because he gets capital punishment, even though the court cannot collect it, nevertheless, it is a valid sale. Ela af agav dechi katav a le bedina lo amrinan le ziel havla kevan dechi aheb le la have etnan. Now we explain further, right? And so in the case of etnan, even though when the mother brings a claim against the son in court, it says, you know, I want that seh payment, we do not say, oh, you have to give it to her. Instead, we give him capital punishment. Nevertheless, that which he gave her is considered an etnan, and one could not sacrifice it. So here too, even though regarding actual payment, if the buyer comes and says, I want my seh that this guy acquired by taking my fig, even though when it comes to court, we do not tell the thief, go and pay, because he gets capital punishment. Nevertheless, afilu achi kevan deka makni le behachi havia mechira. Since you did do an act of acquisition, that is a valid sale. It's true, it's not collectible in court, but nevertheless, it's a valid sale, and therefore, when one would be liable to 4 and 5 a payment, except that if he also violated Shabbat on the Donaita level, then he would not have to. But it is a case of Mechira that we have to give the Chidush that although he stole and sold and did a valid sale, nevertheless he doesn't have to pay because he also gets capital punishment. Baruch Adonai Le'olam, Amen v'Amen.